who you are is more important than what you do. Meaning, you know, if we're great podcasters or speakers or entrepreneurs or business owners or whatever, but we suck as husbands, as fathers, as mothers, as wives, as human beings, if we're like this shell of a human being, we're doing it wrong.
Welcome to Are You Real? Finding the Authentic You, the podcast that focuses on Christians that are active in everyday life. Join in as we speak to everyone from successful business owners to educators to athletes about their faith and how it helps them reach out and revolutionize those around them to do the same. And now get ready to roar with your host, the voice of manifestation, John Fuller.
Hey, Roar Nation, John Fuller here, and I am really excited today. I know I say that every episode, but let me tell you why, because there is very few people that I endorse that I actually listen to on a weekly basis that has their own podcast. And this, my friends, happens to be one. So, Grant, are you fired up and ready to go?
John, I'm ready to do this.
Let's do it! All right, so Grant Baldwin is the creator of thespeakerlab.com and the Book and Paid to Speak training program. He is a nationally known keynote speaker and author and hosts the Speaker Lab podcast, which I love. As a speaker, Grant has given hundreds of presentations and he's spoken to over 400,000 people in 45 different states through leadership conferences, conventions, and other events. His book and curriculum for students, Reality Check, is taught in 400 schools around the country. As much as he enjoys speaking and entrepreneurship, Grant loves his family more. He is married to his high school sweetheart, and they have three girls, and they live in Nashville, Tennessee. All right, Grant, I just barely scratched the surface of what you're doing, man. Tell us more about your passion, what you do, and how you minister the gospel on the side with that.
Yeah, thanks, John. So I've been a full-time speaker for about the past decade or so, and then recently been transitioning where I'm doing a lot more teaching about speaking. So speaking about speaking, kind of a meta thing there. So there's a lot of speakers. We were talking a little bit offline of there's a lot of speakers and people that have done some speaking, whether in the, you know, the church world, the faith world, or elsewhere, and are intrigued by speaking and want to get into speaking, but just have no idea where to begin or what to do. And so that's a lot of what we do today is we help speakers understand how to find and book speaking engagements. And so we help them on the business side of creating their marketing materials, of giving them a step-by-step system and roadmap to follow, to find and book speaking engagements, to get clear on their message, to know how much to charge, to put together a website, a demo video. So just all the nuances that go into running a business, and specifically a business as a speaker. That's a lot of what we teach today. But you mentioned, more importantly, I'm married to my high school sweetheart. I've got three little girls. So it's me and a house full of women, which is awesome. I love it. my own little Barbie dream house there. So so I love being an entrepreneur, but it's definitely way more important to me to be a good husband and a good father.
Just curious, how has the online world business kind of changed for you? Because I'm assuming you've made a lot of that transition from speaking into the online world. How's that transition been for you?
Well, it's been really good. I mean, part of the challenge with speaking is, I remember a buddy saying early on in my career that speaking is a high-paying manual labor job, in that we get paid way too well to stand on a stage and run our mouth. But the nature of speaking is that you have to get on a plane and you have to go somewhere and you have to leave your family. And that's the part that sucks. That's the part that nobody sees. And so it doesn't scale really well in that you can only charge so much and you can only do so many gigs. So I got to a point for me personally a couple years ago where I did, I think, 68, 69 gigs in 1 year and was charging at the upper end of what I felt comfortable with in the particular market niche I was in. And so I was kind of going, well, I guess I could just do this for the next, you know, 20, 30 years. And there are certainly speakers that do that and are very, very successful in that way. But I was intrigued by other ways that I could build and grow my business. And so the online space was definitely something I was intrigued by, definitely something I was interested in. So sort of paying more attention to podcasts and blogs and the various opportunities that exist for online business. And part of, I feel like in large part of what I do today is I'm still doing a lot of speaking. I'm just doing it more in a digital format where, as before, I may go stand on a stage and speak in front of, you know, 1,000 or several thousand people. But the challenge with that is it's confined to just that space and just that room. I had to be there. I had to physically be there. And I could only talk to those people in that space at that time. Whereas today, I may do, you know, a Facebook Live video. I may do a webinar. I might do some type of online training, even just sending out some email trainings or, you know, like you mentioned, our Booked and Paid to Speak training course, where we have students in 16 different countries that are a part of the course, all different subjects and topics. So now I feel like we're able to do a lot of what we were doing before in terms of speaking and making an impact, but able to do it in a digital way, in an online way that definitely scales beyond the stage.
Do you like that better as far as, I don't know, I've heard you talk about it on your podcast too. There is almost like a high or a rush being on stage and talking versus, I'd say, doing a podcast or doing other things. I mean, do you kind of miss that aspect, or have you done it enough now you don't really care because you'd rather be home with your family? How's that dynamic?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely pros and cons, and that you're exactly right that, you know, us having a conversation on a podcast or me doing a webinar, if I'm doing a webinar and there's 300 people on that webinar, that's cool. But at the end of the day, I'm still sitting in a room by myself, talking to myself. So there's people that may be watching or listening all over the world, but it's still just me in a room by myself. Whereas when you're standing on a stage and you are giving a presentation and you are connecting with the audience and you can see their faces and you can watch their reaction and you know that you're taking them on a journey and you know each thing that you're doing is building to something else and you know where it's going and you have that live in-person interaction, like there's nothing that competes with that for sure. So there's definitely pros and cons in that you lose out on some of that. But again, like we were talking about before, by doing it the kind of the digital online way, we've been able to reach more people that may not have heard us speak, you know, in a physically in-person sense otherwise.
Yeah, absolutely. It was funny. When we first started our podcast, we were getting maybe, I don't know, a couple of thousand downloads a month. And I was a little discouraged because I was going through John Lee Dumas's course and being part of that program, you see people that are getting like thousands and thousands of downloads a day. And it's hard not to compare, which you shouldn't, but you do. And anyways, at first, I remember sitting down with my pastor and he's like, do you realize like you're sitting down in front, be equivalent to standing on stage speaking to thousands of people every month?
And right, right.
You know, I just never thought of it that way. And now it's kind of hard to imagine. We hit about 50,000 a month now. It's hard to imagine because you can't see them. You know they're there because you see the numbers, but it's just such a different dynamic. It's funny.
Yeah, for sure. I think definitely like digitally, you can certainly reach a much bigger audience, but it's hard to compete with the in-person, seeing people's faces, seeing their reaction and, you know, interacting with them in some way.
Yeah, I don't have anybody booking me to go speak at a Coliseum to 50,000 people, but
definitely
in the future. So, Grant, I want to get into, what was the transition? What were you doing before? I've heard some of your stories on your podcast, and just for my listeners, like what you were doing before and how you followed your passion, because obviously you knew it was in you and you had to make a shift from what you were currently doing to pursue what you wanted to do. Will you go back to some of that and those stories and just even the hardships of that and kind of the light at the end of the tunnel?
Yeah. So the nutshell was, I actually in high school, I was really involved in my local church. My youth pastor had a big impact in my life. And he was also just a phenomenal communicator. Still one of the best communicators I've seen. And I was like, I want to do that. Like, I want to be a youth pastor. I want to be a professional teenager. That seems like a cool gig. And so I went to Bible college right after school, right after high school. And while I was in Bible college, I actually worked for a guy who was a full-time speaker. And he was speaking primarily in like the Christian youth space, church youth world of conferences and midweek services, weekend services, camps, that kind of stuff. And so I was kind of helping on like the logistics and travel and details and the business side of stuff. So I got to see kind of behind the curtains there. It's like, okay, this is a thing. Like, this is apparently people do this. You know, I didn't realize that before.
Grant, just real quick, do they actually make much money? I'm just curious because it seems to me, unless you're in a huge church, that's a really hard business to get into just because most churches struggle to pay. That's what I think. I mean, I could be wrong, but I think so.
A lot of it depends on the business model of the speaker. And it's very, very true that you can charge more in some markets compared to others. So, for example, for this particular speaker that I was working with, he was doing a lot of church camps and retreats and stuff. So he might do a camp and get paid the same as what I would get paid to do like one school assembly. And so for me, that was very, very influential in terms of, now, you know, you can certainly do that and you just make it up in volume. You just do a lot of speaking engagements. But you're exactly right that a lot of churches, and especially specifically youth ministries, they are pretty limited budget-wise. So you can do it, but it just you certainly got to do it in volume. So that was actually very influential for me when I started speaking, of looking at him going, okay, there's an opportunity there to speak, but I'm not sure that I want to do it that way, meaning that I don't want to, like, he was traveling a lot, but at the same time, to his credit, amazing husband, amazing father, still has a great relationship with his wife and his kids today. And I just knew I didn't think I wanted to be gone that much. And so I, even though he was, I guess to take a step back, So I was went to Bible college, was a youth pastor for a little while, and then decided I wanted to pursue a career as a speaker. So again, I was kind of reflecting back on my experience with him and seeing what he did and kind of how he built his business. So I decided I wanted to, because a lot of my experience was with students, I wanted to keep speaking to students and youth, but I wanted to do it more in the quote-unquote secular world of speaking at high schools, speaking at youth leadership conferences. I spoke at a lot of colleges, spoke to parents and teachers, a lot of just in the education space. So even though I was speaking to the same audience at the end of the day, the market that I was speaking to of being in the quote-unquote non-church world definitely paid more. And so from a business standpoint, it made more sense for me, again, this is just personally speaking, to go more that route where I could still speak to students and still kind of scratch that itch, but was able to do it in a way for business that made more sense financially.
I'm just curious, was that hard as far as, because obviously being a Christian, so where I have a hard time sometimes is knowing, like, biblically, I think, man, the answer is like biblical, like there's a Jesus answer to it. And I don't mean that as like a blanket, like everything, but do you have a hard time sometimes because you want to share that, but obviously in a school setting or something you can't? I mean, how do you give people sound principles, but yet you can't have a religious overtone? Is that right? Or I mean, how do you balance
yeah,
that?
No, I mean,
that'd be really hard for me. It is hard for me.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a great question. And I remember early on, like, I had done a lot of speaking. I had a lot of speaking experience, but a lot of my speaking experience was in the context of church, where, you know, everybody take out your Bible and turn to this, and let me use this parable, let me use this story. And you don't have that when you go into a school. And so first of all, I would say that for me, I wanted to be very, very respectful as this school or this organization has hired me to come in and give a, you know, some type of leadership or motivational message to their students. I don't want to take advantage of that situation to say, well, I'm just gonna preach, I'm gonna say whatever I want and you know, forget about it. So I wanted to be respectful of the boundaries of, you know, especially church and state. And so one of the things that I found is when I would speak in a school, for example, I would give a lot of the same type of talk that I would give at a, you know, a weekend or a midweek church service, but I'm removing the scripture and removing some of the stories, and maybe instead of telling a parable, I'm telling a story from my own life, you know? So I found that a lot of the principles and the truth that we were talking about is still, at the end of the day, it's still truth. And in fact, I had several times where I'd go speak and I'd have, you know, a teacher, a principal, an administrator, a student who'd come up and be like, are you a Christian or were you a youth pastor? Ah, I thought so. And so, you know, you'd still have some of that. So again, I wanted to be extremely respectful of the environment and who had hired me to come speak.
Okay. I think during your podcast, if I remember right, one of the last questions you ask, and I kind of start with this going into stuff, what is your saying? It couldn't be worse than this. Is that what you ask your speaker guests?
Yeah, a lot of times I like to ask speakers out of just like, you know, as a speaker, it seems super glamorous and sexy, and you just get to stand on stage and people listen to you and they clap for you and want pictures with your autographs and all that stuff. But at the same time, there's plenty of moments where you're just like, that sucks. That didn't go well.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
Something just went off the rail. So yeah, I always like to ask speakers, tell me about a time where it couldn't be worse.
Couldn't
than this.
Be worse than this. Yes, that's it. Okay. So my question to you is, I want to go not just in speaking, but just in life in general. What has been one of those moments that most people just don't get to hear because you don't talk about that on your podcast, but has been a really hard moment for you, maybe when you were making that transition or things where life was just really tough, you had to grind it out, but not just that story, but what God was able to do at the end of that and how that boosted your faith?
It's a great question. And I think there's part of the challenge of being self-employed is I've been self-employed for about a decade now, and I have no steady paycheck. And so my wife and I were talking about this the other day, that there are days where like a job sounds nice, where you just know what's coming. And so there are days where I remember when I was doing a lot of speaking that I would have some months where I would make more in one month than I made like my entire youth pastor salary. And then you'd have another month where, you know, like December, historically, most organizations and events aren't hiring speakers in December. So it's just a dead month. So you may make bank one month and may make squat, literally nothing, you know, another month.
Oh, yes.
And so you have those months where it feels like these massive highs and these massive lows, not only financially, but just even like mentally and emotionally, just going like, what am I doing? Like, what if this doesn't work? Like, what if this all comes caving in? Like, what am I going to do next? And so you definitely have those days where it feels really, really good and you just feel like on top of the world, and then other days where it just feels mentally, emotionally crushing. So I've certainly had those days. I don't want to certainly paint the picture that every day of being self-employed or entrepreneur life is wonderful, because it's not. It's really, really difficult. It's really, really tough. And so I think that's always a good reminder for me, is to, when I have those moments and you kind of come out of those seasons and you look back and be like, oh, so it worked out and God took care of things, and then I panicked again, but still he takes care of it. So I think there's definitely a level of that, of just reminding yourself like, hey, when things get difficult mentally, emotionally, financially, whatever, just reminding yourself you've been here before, you've seen this through, God provides for you, takes care of you and your family. And so having that level of confidence that it always seems to work out, and know that you do what you can do, and just also trust that the rest will take care of itself.
So have you had those moments, man, where you were just like so stressed out, just wondering like, is this bill or these things are possibly going to get paid? And then all of a sudden it's like at that moment, like you pray about it and like somebody calls or you got a job or checks in the mail or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, we've certainly had the moments where, yeah, you get like, you go for a while and you're not getting anything. And then all of a sudden you get booked for something, or you make a sale or something happens, and it changes your confidence level, just boosts your confidence level. I remember, especially early on when we were transitioning from being youth pastors to being a full-time speaker, it was a hard season. It was a rough season of just making that transition. I remember at one point we were getting close to Christmas, and like we were just broke. Like we just didn't have any money. And so like the idea of Christmas presents was just like, it sounds nice, but we just didn't have the money. And I remember like in our mailbox, there's a blank envelope with a couple $100 in it. And we're like, what? That's crazy. You know, so like a moment like that where you're just like, things, you know, things work out, things take care of themselves.
I'm just laughing thinking about it, because it doesn't matter if it's speaking, construction, what it is. I mean, there's been days where, like you talk about months, there's months where we're just killing it and I'm just doing an enormous amount of business. And you just think, man, I'm on top of the world. Things are going great. And then I'll finish like 4, 5, 6 jobs. And then I'm waiting for a week for other jobs to start or something. Right. And it's so stressful. And I literally just have to sit back and be like, all right, Lord, you've never failed me. I think there's a scripture in the Old Testament that talks about, says, I've never seen a righteous man beg for bread. And just knowing that God comes through. And anyways, it's just funny because it just happens. So
totally. Very much so.
Okay, Grant, when did you kind of realize, you've already hit on it a little bit, but when did you realize this is what I was created to do? This is definitely my sweet spot. What did that look like for you?
Yeah, so when I was a youth pastor, I was doing a lot of speaking, mostly, again, primarily to students on the midweek services. So that certainly gave me a lot of at-bats and practice just to speak and to get better. But from time to time, I would get to speak on the weekends and speak in big church, you know, and I speak in front of adults. And I remember several of those that went really, really well. And I felt each time, I felt like I was getting better. I felt more confident. I felt like I was getting, you know, good feedback. And it was like connecting with people. And it was just kind of the sense of like, okay, I think there's something here. So when I decided I wanted to pursue a career as a speaker, is actually the church we were at, I was doing a lot of speaking, was the youth pastor there. Parts of it I liked, parts of it I didn't like, but I remember being at a youth pastor conference, a youth specialties conference many years ago, and is actually in Nashville, which coincidentally is where we live now. And so I remember sitting in a session, and I remember the guy saying, I don't even remember who the speaker was, but I remember something to the effect of him saying, you know, if you don't enjoy at least 80% of what you're doing, you need to find something else. And I remember at the time, like we were already kind of thinking about, I don't know, is this what we want to do? Do we want to do something else? And so I remember him saying that. And I vividly remember like going out in the hall right afterwards and calling my wife and saying like, I don't know what we're going to do next, but I know this isn't it. And so I resigned that position like a month later.
Did you have kids yet?
My wife was like 4 or 5 months pregnant with our first child.
Okay.
So
it's
like
still, so that's on the back of your mind thinking I got a kid coming. Yeah.
It's not even on the back of my mind. It's way on the front of my mind. Like, okay. Dang, this like, cause on paper it made no sense of like, you've got your first kid on the way. And it's like, there's nothing like bringing a kid in the world to just like get your attention. Like you got to like figure some stuff out, you know? So it was definitely, that was a huge catalyst for me to figure out what I wanted to do next. So when I remember we resigned like in December. And so for the next about 9 months, I felt like I was just floundering in life. And it was a season I look back on that was a really, really difficult season of going, what do I want to do with my life? What do I want to be when I grow up? I've kind of felt like I was having this quarter life crisis or something of going, you know, I went to Bible college. I was a youth pastor. It wasn't the greatest experience. I know not all churches are like this, but I've heard enough other horror stories to know that I don't know if this is what I want to go back into. And so just 9 months of just kind of like soul searching. And I kind of kept coming back to speaking was something I wanted to do. And I remember coming across a speaker boot camp thing that I borrowed some money from my dad to attend and went to that. And that was a huge catalyst of feeling like, okay, I can do this, and kind of help give me some confidence that I could actually make this happen. So I started booking some engagements, and it's really speaking is a lot about momentum. And the more you speak, the easier it is to get gigs. But in the beginning, there's a huge grind to it. And there's a lot of just, again, non-sexy, non-glamorous hustle and work behind the scenes to book speaking engagements and to get paid and to, you know, all the details that go into it. So there's a lot of that early on, but with each booking, I felt more and more confident and comfortable that I could do this and I could make this happen. So yeah, those 9 months, that was a brutal phase of life, just kind of wandering the desert and figuring out what was next. But at the same time, it really helped me to solidify that, you know, speaking was something I feel like I could do.
Yeah. Was that awkward charging at first, trying to figure that out, like what to charge and get a feel for that and that aspect of
it? A little bit. I mean, the reality is that speakers are, the nature of the speaking industry is speakers are paid really, really well. And so the idea that, especially when I got started, I would charge something, let alone anything, to get paid just seemed absurd. So I think definitely the more you speak and the more that you charge for that, the more comfortable it gets. But it's still, at the end of the day, I totally acknowledge that it just feels strange sometimes that to get paid way too well to do something that's just fun, that you just enjoy doing. But the other thing I would say is that it's important to remember that as a speaker, that you are providing significant value for that event, for that right. client, for that audience, for that church, whatever it may be. And so sometimes it may feel weird, especially like in the church or nonprofit space, of like, I feel weird getting paid to do this. But again, remember that, you know, if you're speaking at a church, that staff there, that pastor, they're most likely getting paid, and that's how they make their living. And speaking is how you make your living, and you are providing value. And so there's nothing wrong with you being compensated for what it is that you offer. So the danger, though, is for speakers, especially in the ministry world and in the church world, is that, again, they kind of have this balance of, I want to speak, and I just want this to be my ministry. Well, if you're just running a ministry, you're going to be broke. And I'm not advocating at all, like, you know, you should speak because you can get rich doing it. No, like speak to make an impact and speak to make a difference. But at the same time, like, I like to eat and live indoors, and I have a wife and three daughters, you know, who are dependent on me providing a life for them. And
right.
My girls eat way too much food. They just eat constantly. So I have to provide for them. So that means, in turn, I have to charge for what it is that I offer, you know? So I don't think there's anything wrong with that at all. And there's nothing to be ashamed of with that whenever you're charging for, you know, a service that you're providing or value that you're offering to an audience.
Yeah, that's funny you said that, because as you said that, I was thinking going back 10, 15 plus years and some of like my first remodels that I ever did. And I was thinking, there is no way that I would charge what I did then. I couldn't even pay the insurance for my business for this, some of the stuff that I did then. So obviously you go into it kind of gun shy, like, oh, can I actually charge this much for it?
Right.
And then as you realize, yes, I can, and I'm actually good at it, and it opens your right. eyes, like, there's people willing to pay good money. If you do the job right, you do a good job, yep. like you're talking about speaking or construction, people are willing to pay it if you do a good job.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And there are, I remember early on, I had a speaker who reached out to me. I vividly remember this, that he emailed me and said, hey, I'm a speaker primarily in the youth space, but he was doing a lot in the church world. And he said, I spoke like 50 plus times the previous year, and I made $13,000.
Oh my gosh.
And he had like five kids even. And I was just like, bro, that's like poverty level. Like, you cannot do that. And so again, there's nothing wrong with speaking and chasing a dream and wanting to help people in terms of ministry. But at the same time, like, if you're making a difference for everybody else, but like, my family is really suffering because I'm running this ministry here, like, something's not right about that. And so I remember just talking with him and just like thinking, that's crazy. That's not a business. You have a hobby, and you're killing yourself and you're killing your family, putting massive financial strain on yourself by doing that. So again, I think there's nothing wrong at all with charging for the value that you offer as a speaker.
Absolutely. So, Grant, what do you feel like your biggest strength is in what you do?
I think one thing I do well is I think I'm good at just executing on seeing something and making it happen, creating a plan for it, and then just executing that plan. So I, you know, sometimes I hear from entrepreneurs, they're like, I got a million ideas a minute. I'm not that guy. I have a couple of ideas here and there and try to be selective about which ones make sense for us and for the business. And then I just try to execute really, really well on those. And I think that's the thing with, for me as a speaker is, like, I think I'm a pretty decent speaker. I think there's certainly plenty of speakers that are much better than me. But I think one thing we've done really, really well is we've developed, you know, systems and processes for finding and booking speaking engagements, for making it simpler for the client. And that's a lot of what we teach within Booked and Paid to Speak, is how to actually do that. And so a lot of it just comes down to not necessarily being the greatest speaker on the planet, but just being able to create and follow a plan and a system that actually helps you get bookings and helps just, you know, build and run the business in general.
Okay. Inside of that, sometimes strength can be an overstrength, using it too much can be a weakness. Do you feel like you have a weakness in that area or something else?
That's a good question. I think that it can be easy to overplan and to overstrategize, or sometimes I'm someone that likes to be, I pride myself on being productive. And so just checking boxes to get done with something. And so sometimes that means that something gets done, but it may not be done to a level of like top-notch excellence, yes. You know? And so it means that not necessarily like you're cutting corners, but if you would have spent more time on it, then it might've been, you know, 10% better. And so I think there's always that balance and challenge of when is something good enough that, hey, this works, let's go with this, versus feeling like this has to be perfect. And so I don't, like, perfection is not something I really deal with or struggle with. So it's more like shipping it and finishing it, but making sure that it's still, you know, still quality, and you're not just throwing up stuff just to throw up stuff.
Yeah, I have the same struggle myself, so I can totally relate with you on that level. What's the biggest thing right now you feel like God's stirring inside of you spiritually or within your business, but not just within your business, but what God's doing inside of you right now?
You know, a big thing that has really always been important to me is really my family. You know, a line that I like to use a lot is, who you are is more important than what you do. Who you are is more important than what you do. Meaning, you know, if we're great podcasters or speakers or entrepreneurs or business owners or whatever, but we suck as husbands, as fathers, as mothers, as wives, as human beings, if we're like this shell of a human being, then like we're doing it wrong, you know? Yeah. So I think a big thing to me is, yes, I'm extremely driven and motivated as an entrepreneur and as a business owner. I really enjoy what I do, and I spend a lot of time on it. But at the same time, knowing that my daughters don't care how many people listen to my podcast. They don't care what the size of my email list is. They don't care about that stuff. It just doesn't, yeah. It does not matter to them at all. They could care less. But granted, that does provide a life for them that they don't, you know, they may not realize or recognize. But just again, reminding myself that who I am as a human, who I am as a father and as a husband is more important than what I do in terms of my business.
I like it. It's a great answer. I totally agree with you. How are you able to share the gospel? So obviously, I love what you said before the show. You said, I am a speaker who is a Christian. We don't have to go label ourselves. I'm not a Christian construction guy. I just happen to do construction and I speak, but I'm a Christian also. But how do you use that opportunity to share the gospel and to minister to people while you're out?
Yeah, I think early on in my career, especially coming out of Bible college and working in a church as a youth pastor, like I felt the need to always had to directly tie back to faith. And so, yeah, even, you know, like we were talking about earlier of speaking, wanting maybe to tie something into faith. Now I feel like I'm able to be a successful Christian business owner in the marketplace. And so sometimes that may mean just being a great employer. I have several people that work for me, being great with how I treat my people, being great with how we work with vendors, how we treat customers. And so sometimes it's not necessarily some direct faith push or spiritual push as much as I think the way that I'm living life and representing Christ on a, you know, daily, weekly, monthly basis. I mean, hopefully that's something that's moving the needle for the people that we work with.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there a book that you've read recently that's been impactful for you?
Chewing on it here. I'm looking over at my, I, it's mostly all like business books, like just some, I don't know, some boring stuff. There's a book I read recently called Scaling Up on just building more of a company and a business. I was trying to think for something. I was kind of looking over my bookshelf here. I read a book on called Who, about hiring and boring stuff like that. Let's see here. I'm looking to see if anything really jumps out at me. There's a really good book I like called, well, I'll give you a couple. Like going back to the conversation earlier of figuring out what I wanted to do with life. This is two books that really made a big impact on me during that season, because I think there's always a lot of people in that spot of going, I'm doing a job right now. I don't love it. I don't hate it, but I'm not really sure what I would rather be doing. Two books that made a big difference for me. One was by Dan Miller called 48 Days to the Work You Love. That made a big impact. And then another one was by Max Lucado called Cure for the Common Life. Both of those were really impactful books of just helping me. Like there's several practical exercises in both of them that I went through just to kind of help me think through, like, what am I good at? What are my skills? What would I enjoy doing? You know, if time, money, location were all irrelevant, if I was guaranteed success, what would I want to do? And so a lot of that led me to speaking, because that was something that I really kept coming back to. So again, those were books that weren't necessarily like recent reads, but something that through the nature of, you know, kind of this thread of the conversation in terms of figuring out what I wanted to do and being a speaker, those two books really had a big impact for me.
What was the one by Dan Miller? I wrote down the other one by Max Lucado. What was the one?
Yeah, 48 Days. To the Work You Love. 48 that- Days to the Work You Love by Dan Miller, and then Cure for the Common Life by Max Lucado.
Okay, awesome. All right. So, Grant, would you share with us some resources that you would recommend for our listeners that are wanting to get into speaking or the things you do? I know you have some great courses, some free stuff, some paid stuff. Tell us about you and what you have to offer our audience.
Yeah, thanks, man. In terms of, we have the Speaker Lab podcast. You mentioned that you you listen to that. We appreciate that, man. And so we do that show every single week. And so we interview speakers and those who've been successful speakers. Those who I interviewed just actually this morning, a guy who'd gone through one of our trainings and is a brand new speaker, but has really been successful already. And then we interview people that are you know, somehow connected to the speaking industry. A neighbor of mine happens to be actually the president of a major speakers bureau here in Nashville. So we talked with him and talked with people on how to build your business beyond the stage. So, you know, doing an online course or webinars or email list building or podcasting, you know, some of those different subjects and topics that we've covered and talked about. Sometimes I'll do some teaching and training on a specific speaking topic. So yeah, the Speaker Lab podcast, I definitely encourage people to check out. If you want something a little more thorough, then we actually do a free training webinar just about every single week that people can check out over at freespeakerworkshop.com, freespeakerworkshop.com. We go through, one of the things we teach is the speaker success roadmap. It's a 5-step process that we teach on exactly how to find and book paid speaking engagements. And so we walk through that on that training, do some live Q&A. And then you mentioned we've also got our flagship training program is called Booked and Paid to Speak. And so it's a more of an in-depth course and community helping people understand how to build their business as a speaker. So yeah, the best place to probably start would be the podcast or freespeakerworkshop.com.
Yeah, guys. And Roar Nation, I definitely recommend the podcast. I've listened to at least 50 episodes. I listen to you actually every week. I really love your stuff. So it's great. Grant, I want to ask you, this is one question I never miss for all of mine, kind of like the one that you hit on. Couldn't be worse than this. But my question would be, if you could go back to the younger you, do you remember Big with Tom Hanks?
Yeah.
Okay. If you got to go back to a younger you, what would you tell yourself to encourage yourself, to propel you into your future and what you're doing now? Now, it's not going to change. You can't change anything, but you can give yourself some advice to what you're going to go through and what you're going to finding your purpose.
Yeah, I would say I would tell myself to chill out, relax. I think it's easy throughout our conversation here and just kind of thread. I think it's easy to get worried, to get anxious, to wonder, how, you know, sometimes we wish we could look into the magic crystal ball of how is this all going to play out. But I think I would remind myself like, hey, dude, you keep doing your thing. It's going to work out. Chill out sometimes. Don't be so stressed. Don't be anxious. And, you know, a big scripture verse for me has always been Jeremiah 29:11 of God just saying, I know the plans I have for you, you know? So like, dude, chill out. It's going to be all right. So I think that would be a big thing I'd remind myself from several years ago.
Awesome. I love it. So one more time, Grant, tell us where we can find you one more time.
Yeah, definitely stop by thespeakerlab.com, or again, for people that are looking for more help on the speaking stuff, you can definitely check out freespeakerworkshop.com.
Awesome. Okay, Grant, just hold on just a second. Roar Nation, thank you guys so much for checking us out. Please get on iTunes, rate and review us. I'm really excited. We've gotten a lot of 5-star ratings, about 50, and I got my first 1-star rating. So I actually wish they would have left something. It would have been funny to read, but that's okay. Guys, check out Grant's stuff. I highly recommend it. I listen to it every week. And also, if you are wanting to find purpose and a roadmap to success, get on our website, areyoureal.org, and we have a 5 days to purpose coming out soon that will help you find purpose, passion, and what God created you to do. So at the end of the day, remember, be real, be authentic, and be you. God bless.
That's all for this episode of Are You Real? Finding the Authentic You. Be sure to go to areyoureal.org for your free questionnaire to identify your gifts and talents and how you can use them to help people become leaders and catapult them into their destiny to help others become the leaders of tomorrow. We appreciate you spending your time with us and look forward to helping you reach out and revolutionize next time on Are You Real? Finding the Authentic You.